Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Back, second half of the show on a Friday afternoon. We began 2 hours ago talking to Chris Del Conte, the vice president and athletic director at the University of Texas. And somehow you probably heard by now that Texas and Oklahoma will be coming into the SEC in July of 2024. We speak now to the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey. Commissioner, thanks for the time. Seems like this has been quite a journey and odyssey for you and your league. How do you feel today knowing the start date?
Well, it's exciting to have a level of certainty. You know, you go back to that Friday when we announced the invitations. If you replayed that video, I was pretty subdued. We always wanted to be respectful, even with the difficulty of transition taking place of our colleagues. They've made a decision to facilitate this early exit on their part. That means early entry for us. We now know some timelines rather than dealing with the what ifs, and looking forward to being a 16-team league.
Yeah, I do remember that day, Commissioner. You were. It seemed like the weight of the world was on your shoulders, even though it was a joyous day for fans like us. There were a lot of things to get through. That's all past now, and now it's about figuring it out. And I know it's something that your team and your athletic directors and everyone else have been working on now for some time. But where are we on knowing what this league is going to look like, other than having 16 schools in it?
Well, we start with 16. We start with the summer 2024 entry. We also know that year will be transitioning our first pick TV rights from CBS to ABC and ESPN. I think that's an important element, because we built into that opportunity flexibility around how we schedule football games. You know, that midday window that's generally very clean, we've got a lot more flexibility, so it's the right timing for us. We also have the onset of the college football playoffs, so those are big picture issues. We then go to our reality, which is how we schedule. That's inherent in the question you're asking me. We have made it through virtually every sport, regular season and postseason format. We just finished a meeting of our athletics directors last week in New Orleans, where some of the final touches were put on volleyball and baseball, for example. Those need some final approval. What's left is football. And we were in Destin, you recall a conversation, probably where I used the word poised as it relates to making a decision on the football schedule, from July of 21 until that point, late May of 22. A lot of work had been done, but we said collectively, let's stop, because there's a lot of things out there that we'd like to know. What's going to happen with the CFP? So you check that box. We learned that. What's going to happen with our colleague conference's media rights? We saw the Big Ten move in its media rights, but also expand. So that's information we didn't expect. We wanted to work through some elements of our own analysis, tiebreakers, and kind of the stuff that's not that interesting for TV. We continue to work through that along with analytics. And all of that's really helped inform our decision making, not to mention knowing the entry date. And I would say we have about a 90-day window that leads us into our Destin meetings to wrap up our football decision making. I'm happy to talk about the not all the specifics, but some of the specifics. But that's the time frame now that we know the entry point.
The public is pretty cognizant, Commissioner, of some of the issues. We know there's currently, we have 8. Will there be 9? Figuring out the division or non-division seems to be already in the wind, and then how the schedules look. And I realize all this is still under a conversation, but can you give us some guidelines to what and how this is figured out?
Well, a couple of things. The public is very aware because I receive letters still suggesting different scheduling models. And I can assure people we've probably thought about that approach, whatever it may be. So we've looked at well over 40 different formats, if you will. And from those formats, there are different models. What I said way back in the summer of 2021 is I'd like us to engage in blue sky thinking. So look at the big picture, but also figure out how we can move our teams through our campuses with greater frequency. And we still under this 12-year rotation haven't had teams visit some cross-divisional rivals. We then worked in groups and then individually with athletics directors to talk about priorities. The words fairness and balance came out, and then we had to define those. Fairness means some level of competitive proximity to others in the league. You'll never have perfection there. Imbalance is the ability to rotate teams through with greater frequency. That's moved us towards a focus on a single division model. That doesn't mean that's the only possible model for us. It moved us quickly away from this pods idea. You know, in that model, we would have sent teams back to the same place in repeated years before they'd host a team at home. That's not going to resonate well with our fans, even though over 10 years it might even out. We know a lot about divisions. We know how those work, how you would allocate teams, but we really talked about the single division model. And what's key is the number of games. We can rotate teams through either an 8 or 9 game, either through an 8 or 9 game model with a lot of frequency. What becomes really important is longstanding rivalry games, geographic proximal games. And we want to work with our TV partner to learn a little bit more before we make our final decision. So that's where we are. Those are the elements discussed. It's been a really healthy conversation. We've used an outside firm to help facilitate some of the thinking, but also some of the analytics, some of the modeling, and we'll continue to do so over the weeks and months ahead.
Commissioner, I know because I've heard you talk about this so often, the air of collegiality in these rooms, although it sounds like these conversations could be fairly spirited. How would these decisions be reached? I realize you're the commissioner, but what happens if there's an impasse?
Well, in each of our athletics directors' meetings, in fact, I could turn around. We have a little sheet we share with our ADs that quotes the legendary Doug Dickey. And he said to my predecessor after Mike's first meeting, there was a 7-5 vote on something. He said, Commish, in the SEC, 7-5 is 12-0 when we leave the room. Paul, I said to our athletics directors at the beginning of our scheduling discussion in New Orleans, eventually we're going to take votes on these issues. And it's going to be a majority determination. I guess you could have an 8-8 vote, and then we'll be back in further discussions. But we've got to get people to the point of having enough information to make these key decisions. When we talk about what we've done in some of our other sports, some of those meetings have included disagreement. It's not like everything's been a unanimous vote, but one of the hallmarks of what we're welcoming two new universities and their athletics programs into is a really effective culture where we can disagree, we make decisions, and we move forward. And that's what we're going to do on our football schedule.
I know, Commissioner, when we talked to you on that summer day a year and a half ago, it was awkward because of the legality. Now that that is out of the way, I know you visited the campuses of both. What can you say about the fact that Oklahoma and Texas now are finally coming in, and we know when?
Yeah, well, a couple of things about that day. We really, you know, the news had popped at Media Days, 8 or 9 days early, and I think I did my best to avoid you, on a day-to-day basis. So I felt badly about the relational issues we had there for a moment. We also wanted to be respectful. You know, I recognize still the turmoil I caused in a relationship with Bob Bowlesby and in his leadership. But we also, in talking with both presidents, they were very clear with me that July of 2021 was not the moment to be launching fireworks and producing videos. Others have taken different approaches in those moments, but we wanted to be as respectful as we could in the difficult circumstance. So that was part of what you saw. The second part was recognizing the entry date was dictated by existing contractual agreements, and we're now clear of those. We now can watch a little bit of video production on social media. We can talk about 16 just means more. We can look towards the future. And what you look at is, we're going to have like the two greatest music cities in this country between Nashville and Austin in this league. If you've been to Oklahoma City to visit for the Softball World Series and see the growth of that city, that's pretty special. And it fits in places like Athens and Nashville and Lexington, and I could name them all. You see really high-level competitive athletics with leading universities like we have. That's incredibly exciting. Our fan bases. I was traveling through Memphis. I've told this story a few years ago when Delta had bought out Northwest and Memphis was still a hub for Delta, and Texas had played in Oxford, and just the overwhelming representation of the Texas fans. You know, this is one of those expansions that's really unique in that we restore rivalries. Texas A&M playing Texas, Arkansas playing Texas, dating back to some of their legendary games in the 60s. You know, uniquely for like our legal friends, Oklahoma and Georgia have this relationship around the Board of Regents case that really changed college football and the nature of college football TV. And there are any number of other relationships and interactions that will make what we're going to have special. And I've been kind of overwhelmed starting last night with the number of points of outreach for people want to talk about our future, what it means. And I think that's representation of the full scope of excitement we all have in front of us.
I realize there are so many things to deal with first, but we've seen it in the past with Missouri having an SEC tournament there. We've seen other things. You hate to assume anything, but that's a big area of the country that the SEC is now visiting. At least in Oklahoma, the league has certainly been to Texas with Texas A&M. But will that be noticeable, do you think, as we move down the road? Things that used to be somewhere will maybe pop into the state of Texas or Oklahoma?
It's very much on our mind, Paul. And I think about media days in 2024, the likelihood that we can move westward. We've been talking about that opportunity with a number of locations on our westward side. So, you know, conferences don't move media days. We move media days. We've been in Birmingham a lot. We've been in Atlanta a couple times. We're in Nashville this summer, and we've held off on a future decision, just thinking about if the entry changes, this provides us the opportunity to do something out west. So that's on our mind. And we've talked about any number of other championships where we don't have long-term contracts and the possibilities that exist. And, you know, I lived in the Dallas area for 11 years, and I know the presence that we have from alums all across this conference. I've got many that are friends that have opinions on our expansion that have expressed those to me. But they can be drawn into our events, whether it's in the Houston area, San Antonio, Dallas, up into Oklahoma City. You know, my grandfather was born in Choteau, Oklahoma. So there's a lot of personal familiarity for me, and I'm excited to see what more we might be able to do on our westward side, also recognizing the strength we have in the geographic center and the history we have around some of our events that we need to focus on maintaining.
Well, Commissioner, again, I know it's a day that all of us, I think, have been waiting for it to finally be crowned official. There are a thousand other things I would like to ask you, but I'll save it for another day, because I think this day is to celebrate OU in Texas.
Well, the great thing about the clarity is we know the work we have from scheduling, but then we have a lot of important issues that you and I will be talking about for a long time that will take our focus back to solving some of the challenges and realizing some of the opportunities in front of us in college sports. But moving to 16 is an exciting and unique opportunity in our history, and we look forward to our future.
Thank you very much. The Commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey, joining us on a memorable day and momentous day in the history of the SEC. We'll take a short break. Your reaction right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Glad you're here. Busy afternoon, to say the least. Let's check in with Mike in California. Hey, Mike.
Hey, hi, Paul. How are you?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Yeah, I go back as a UCLA season ticket holder back to the Dick Vermeil days and Terry Donahue back in the Coliseum. And so I'm facing some of the questions of change that I'm sure people in Austin and Oklahoma City are facing. And I just thought I'd run a couple of things by you.
Sure.
And I've always considered you to be the adult in the room when it comes to college sports.
Thank you.
One thing that we've all talked about as UCLA season ticket holders is the Nebraska example of a team that was a perennial New Year's Day bowl team. And since going to the Big Ten, boy, it's a long way from New Year's Day. It's a long way from the Orange Bowl. And so I bring that up. How happy are the people possibly going to be in Austin and Norman if all of a sudden they're a 6-6 team year in and year out? The school's going to have more money, and there'll be more money generated, but the average fan, the season ticket holder, the residents of the state, I can't imagine they're thrilled in Nebraska as opposed to, you know, playing for national championships fairly regularly. So that's one point I'm going to bring up. Another one is the rivalries, the old traditional rivalries, some disappear. In the case of Texas and Oklahoma, they get some back, but Oklahoma State's not going to be there anymore for Oklahoma. TCU, Texas Tech won't be there any longer for Texas. And in our case, is Maryland, Rutgers, and Purdue really any better than Colorado, Utah, and Arizona State?
No. Hey, but Mike, you've raised some very pertinent issues. Let me try to explain Texas's philosophy, though. They looked at the landscape, and determined one thing: they had to get out of the Big 12 from a television standpoint. It was just not going to sustain where the market was. Whether these are right answers or not, this is how they concluded, how they made the conclusion. And then they looked around. They had a couple of choices. They had the ACC, they had the Big Ten, the Pac-12, which, as you remember, they nearly departed for in 2010.
That's right.
Or the SEC, and I think they felt they could have gone anywhere they wanted. I mean, that's how attractive Texas was and is.
Sure.
And Oklahoma was going to go with them, and they chose the SEC. And, yeah, these are all real problems, except they were not making much progress from a football standpoint where they were. Now, there is no mathematical equation that will stipulate if you're doing poorly in an inferior league, why would you suddenly do better in a superior league? But that's the route they chose.
Right, right. And I appreciate all those things. Paul, I guess I'm just maybe speaking from the fans' perspective as opposed to the school's perspective. And, one more point I'd like to bring up, because UCLA, for example, is a perennial national champion in a lot of sports. And I'm just going to throw out basketball for an example. Now, instead of going to the T-Mobile Arena in Vegas for the tournament in March, it's going to be in Indianapolis or Chicago.
Right. No, you got some issues out there.
All three of my points were fan.
Yeah.
What does the fan get out of it?
Mike, let me explain to you what I think the fan gets out of it. Nothing. Collectively, college sports doesn't really care much about the fan because everything is outpriced. You understand that.
And absolutely.
The Big Ten is the biggest mystery because Rutgers has added nothing. Every time I go to New York, I used to go there every week, and I'd land at LaGuardia, and it would say, "Welcome to New York, the home of the Big Ten Rutgers Scarlet Knights." And I'm like, there are more people that watch Alabama games in New York than watch Rutgers games.
Absolutely.
Maryland made a terrible decision. They were in the right league.
The rest of
Purdue and all those, you can't do anything about that. They're just Nebraska. Clearly made the wrong choice at the time. They still haven't recovered.
Right.
It's a real issue, but you're not allowed as a college football fan in 2023 to talk about the fans because I'm not sure they exist anymore.
Well, I should have realized that when we found out what the game times were going to be on Mondays.
Yeah. Well. Exactly.
You live in Santa Barbara, which is at least 2 hours from the Rose Bowl, and let's say you're planning a wedding and you had a game and wedding, and in the normal time you could accommodate both. Well, there goes one or the other.
Now, Mike, I was out in California a couple weeks ago, and I've been there a million times, and I'll never adjust to the differential between East Coast and West Coast because when you work on an East Coast schedule and you're in the West, and by the way, I bring that up not because of anything I was doing, but the games. Fox is going to start games at probably at 9 o'clock in the morning out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure, I grew up in Virginia, and so, I watch the ACC games at 9 o'clock in the morning now.
No, I remember the morning of the national championship game, I had a bunch of stuff to do for ESPN. I got up and went down to the gym, and I took a picture. Fortunately, the gym was open all night, and I took a picture and sent it to my wife. I said, "I'm working out at 3:45 a.m. in the morning." But it's bizarre. Hey, thanks so much. Really enjoyed the conversation. We're heading to the break. I don't think I've worked out since. We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're back. It's been a busy day with so many guests, from the commissioner to the athletic director at Texas. Let's grab some calls here. And Andy in Arkansas. Hey, Andy.
Well, hi, Paul. What an honor to be on your show, my man.
Thank you so much.
I look at everything through an SEC lens with a slant towards Arkansas. It doesn't matter who SEC is playing. I always root for them. Doesn't matter if it's Auburn, Alabama. I want SEC to win. With that said, I'm a little afraid for Arkansas. They've had a hard time getting past A&M and Missouri since they added on to the SEC. Where do you think this is going to put the Razorbacks, who had a step back year, admittedly? They were doing so well a year ago, and then this year they just couldn't get over the hump again. Where do you think this puts them, adding powerhouses like Oklahoma and Texas? And they are. And I appreciate your show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Paul is extremely professional. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way to sugarcoat this, that Arkansas is the school most affected. I don't think it really affects A&M that much, because A&M has got such a massive alumni base. There's just so much money out there that in some ways it may help A&M having Texas back in their on their radar. But Arkansas lives off of that part of the country. They live off of the eastern side of the state, of Oklahoma, where Tulsa is. They live off that panhandle in northern Texas. And this has to affect them. And they're going to be thrown against these schools. You heard you heard Del Conte earlier talk about he wants Arkansas, he wants A&M, he wants Oklahoma on the schedule. And what we don't know, though, is how different everything is going to be. Right now, Arkansas in football has to deal with Alabama every year. They may not have to see Alabama as often. That's a break. They may not see someone else that they're currently seeing. So there's going to be so many unknowns. We're 2 years away from it, and this is not a hype piece for what we do here, but there will be no shortage of conversations about this. There will be an endless stream of what-ifs for every school, because we have gotten used to the way we have. I mean, this all started in 92 with the divisional play, and we've gotten used to it. We added Arkansas and South Carolina, and then Missouri and Texas A&M, and there's been an adjustment, but nothing like this. And not so much two schools coming in. The fact that there won't be the normal divisional conversation, and there's going to be an added conference game. So that's going to really affect the middle class. And I don't use that word disparagingly. I'm talking about the schools in the middle that are either 5-7, 6-6, 7-5, and maybe 8-4. Everyone's getting another loss. That's what nine games means. And the SEC has resisted this for years for that very reason. Let's continue with more phone calls. And Jan is up next. Hey, Jan.
Hi there.
Hey there.
Are you there?
I sure am. Thank you for calling.
Okay. I'm an alum of the University of Tennessee, and I am 80 years old. I started with the general, and I graduated with Peyton Manning. I can't hear you.
Yeah, I'm just listening, Jan.
Oh, okay. Anyway, everybody was telling Bear Bryant stories the other day, and I have a Bear Bryant story. When I had my first son, I was in the hospital, and the girl that was in the room with me had her first son that day. And her husband came in to visit, and he grinned real big, and all of these teeth were missing in the front. And I said, "Have you been in an accident?" And he said, "No." He said, I played football at Alabama. It was my senior year, and it was Bear Bryant's first year there. And he said, we went through 2 weeks of practice, and at the end of that, there were 14 of us left. And he said that he grew up poor, and he needed that scholarship, and So he toughed out his senior year.
Was do you remember, Jen, was he talking about being at Texas A&M or Alabama?
No, he played at Alabama.
Oh, okay.
And he was a senior on Bear Bryant's first year there.
Okay. Wow, what a story. I know Brian did that at Junction when he went to A&M. I didn't realize he had run everybody off at Alabama as well.
Another thing I wanted to tell you, and I have been working on this for years and years and years. When I was in high school, I went to high school in New Jersey, and my next door neighbors invited me to go to a preseason football game in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And this was in the late 50s. And we went to a restaurant to have dinner after the game was over, and the team came in after we were seated, and they were just kind of milling around and visiting with people. And this gentleman came up to our table, and he was just, I'm white, and he was black. And he came up to our table, and he was just absolutely spectacular. And we chatted for a while, and he said, "You're staring at my hands." And I said, "They're big." And he held out his hand, and I put mine on top of it, and my fingers ended where his began. And I don't know who he was until, you know, when Chris Collingsworth did when the NBA turned 100 and he did the thing on the 100 people,
yeah,
100 football players.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Lenny Moore.
Oh, wow. What an interesting. Well, thank you, Jan, so much for calling. That's quite a story. Handsome Joe is up next.
Roll Tide, roll, Paul Feinbaum. You know what? That is a good story right there for Miss Jan. I like that, Paul. But, you know, you've had some good calls today. And our man, he does too, but he's kind of turning into Jim wanting to critique all these callers. I mean, he's talking about how he likes AJ, which it don't surprise me. But, you know, it is what it is, Paul. But, you know, and earlier this week he was talking about NIL deal, Paul. Who in the heck would pay to put our man's image on anything? I mean, unless it's a wanted poster.
Well, I don't know. Maybe some descendant of Jerry Garcia.
He may be. But if you're going to have NIL deals, I could see like Bud Light sponsoring Larry. I mean, that would fit, Paul.
That'd be a good one, yeah.
And maybe just some rock old album store sponsor our man. And, you know, I'd say a bookstore for John in Louisville, you know. He just seems like an intelligent, like type of person that hung out in the library a lot, Paul. But there's a couple of things I want to talk
you
about.
Got one of them is Philadelphia Eagles. Hung out in libraries, Joe.
I've hung out in the library before in the past, and that's just what John reminds me of.
Yeah.
Because normally when people talk with intelligence,
Saturday night, he's at the library. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, he probably got a book club. Or they all get together, instead of talking, they just read books.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, so he calls you so he can do some talking. But anyway, Paul, I want to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles, Paul. I think they're going to beat Kansas City. And Jalen Hurts, hey, we may see him replace Nick Saban one day. I mean, who knows, Paul? And I do want to say this about Larry. Now, Larry, they's a woman for every girl. And I'm sure there's some out there that likes Larry, Paul. But, you know, he don't know how to really treat a lady.
You meant saying, Joe, there's a woman for every man, right?
Yeah, there's a woman for every man.
You said there's a woman for every girl. And, I mean, I know we're all a little more liberated than we used to be, but I thought the phrase was there's a woman for every man.
That's it, Paul. Hey, I got tongue-tied there.
Okay.
I do that sometimes. I just got a little tongue-tied.
Be careful, you know.
Yeah, there's a woman for every man. And, Larry, I mean, there's probably a lot of single ladies his age. So he could get more dates than me. I mean, that just, you know, only there ain't one way to find that out. But I don't want to compete against him because we're not even in the same category. I mean, for one thing, I'm not that elder. I mean, so you can't really put.
So, I mean, are you suggesting, Larry, Joe, remember when you were like a little kid, you played like some sport and they gave everybody a ribbon?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
So are you suggesting that Larry is the guy that got like the eighth place ribbon?
Or ninth place, yeah.
if they had a ninth place. Hey, Joe, we have to run. We're up against a break. We are back. It's been a busy show. It's Commissioner, the athletic director at Texas, and some momentous and memorable callers.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Cat Daddy is up next here on a Friday afternoon. What's up, Cat Daddy? Did not hear Cat Daddy. Did you, Randy?
No.
Let me try Fred in Texas.
My man. How are you doing, brother? Fantastic.
Fred.
I know. You don't even have to answer. Listen, I'm giving you a call about something that really has disturbed my spirit since I first heard about this possibility. And you know what it is. The renaming of Dale Brown Court, apparently approved by the Board of Supervisors this morning, from Dale Brown Court to Dale Brown / Sue Gunter Court. And I read a fantastic piece by Glenn Gilbo. Folks, if you haven't seen it, go get it at LSU Beat Tweet. And he had two questions, Paul, that I want to ask you. One, he proposes that the renaming dilutes Dale Brown's accomplishments at LSU in that it could be a case of woke gone wild. What say ye?
Well, Fred, I know a little bit about it, not enough to be qualified, but I mean, I know Sue's reputation. It was fantastic and exemplary, and I don't really understand when you name something why you go back and amend it. But you know how I feel about Dale Brown. That's a standalone Hall of Fame, once in a lifetime individual.
I tell you, he is, and I've told you this before, but just to refresh your memory and the listeners, you know, Coach Brown and my father were friends before my father passed away. And I had a chance to speak with Coach Brown earlier today, and he gave me permission to share this story. This is just an example of the kind of gentleman he is. First of all, he and Coach Sue Gunter were great friends. And as far as her honor, he absolutely believed that she is deserving of honor and was proud when she had the statue put in the PMAC in 2006. And this is a story that he told me. He said that when Chris Jackson had been away from LSU for at least 20 years and his number had not been retired. Of course, Chris Jackson, who later became Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, he converted from Christian to Muslim. And Coach Brown had been trying to get his number retired, and he got an invitation to go speak at the National Association of Black Journalists down in New Orleans. So he went, and he said he didn't know exactly everything that he'd say. He had some ideas, and when the lights came on and he came out and he saw the cameras, he said, I have a question for you all. Why is it that Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, Chris Jackson's jersey is not retired at LSU? He said, I'll give you two reasons. One, because he's black, and two, because he's Muslim. And it was within 30 days, Coach Brown started getting phone calls back saying, Coach Brown, it's time. I say all that because it's Black History Month. And when we think about, and I told you this before, when we talk about Coach Dale Brown, a man who got death threats because he was had the audacity to hire a black assistant coach. Of course, College Temple had been brought to LSU by the former coach, Fritz Maravich, and played for Coach Brown. Death threats that he received, that his family received, this man became a lifetime member of the NAACP when the Ku Klux Klan wanted him to do the opposite. Coach Brown is bigger than basketball. He's the kind of guy that bends gravity his way just because of his presence and the character that he has. And so I'll just tell you this, in the midst of Black History Month, maybe one of the most unlikely people to many that we would be honoring, but Coach Dale Brown is a hero and has been a friend to the black community. Coach Dale Brown is a person who believes in equality for all, and Coach Dale Brown is the kind of man that we should be finding new ways to honor, not dilute his legacy. And I want to say one more thing to my good friend Tim Brando. I look forward to catching up with you, brother.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.